This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and we come to you every Friday morning at 9 o'clock, and then it's repeated on Sunday mornings at 10 in case you miss it the first time around. You don't want to do that, but you can always listen again or get your friends to listen to it again, a second time or the first time, whatever. Sometimes we do programs on international relations. Sometimes we do them on economics. Sometimes we do them on domestic economic issues. Sometimes we do them on science. And in recent weeks, we've been doing a lot of programming on the arts because it's infinitely less frightening and fearful than some of the other topics. And today, I wanted to have a conversation with Peter Terry. Now, Peter Terry is somebody in South Africa who has, if you look at his biography, he has been in films. He has been on television in all manner of series and standalone programs. He has done broadcasting. He had administrative jobs in the old pact. He's done all manner of stuff for decades upon decades. With his mellifluous voice. And one of the things that caught my eye is that a film that has just recently been released in South Africa, Let's Not Go to the Dogs Tonight, based on a novel, a memoir sort of, by Alexandra Fuller, has just been released. And Peter was in that film playing, he wasn't playing the young man or the ingenue role, he was playing Grandpa, I gather. An older man thinking about history. And of course, Let's Not Go to the Dogs Tonight chronicles the last days of the old Rhodesia as it slowly slides into becoming Zimbabwe. And I was intrigued to discover it was directed by M. Beth Davids, who grew up in South Africa, although she was actually born in the US. But this was her first directorial work. Some of you may remember her in turn in the film Bicentennial Man, where she played Little Miss Who Grew Up. Favorite film of mine, even if the critics knocked it. I always liked it. But Peter, it's a delight to welcome you. Two things I will just add before I ask you a couple of questions. I got to know Peter's voice frequently when he was doing a program on another community station, a classics program in which he mixed poetry and classical music and some listener requests. I always sent requests to him and he never played them. He always told me, yes, what a wonderful idea, but he never played it. And I was always deeply hurt by that, Peter. And then in 2015, he was the narrator for a work at the Johannesburg International Mozart Festival. You may remember this, a work by the late Peter Klatzow, The Legend of Titignani, which is a wonderful piece of music for children in line with the idea of Peter and the Wolf and Tubby the Tuba and several other works of that nature, only it builds on South African themes. And believe it or not, I hold the original score. I got the score from Peter, and it's upstairs, and I mean to frame it someday. Anyway, Peter, welcome. Thanks for joining us. I'm glad you could make time for us.
Thank you, Brooks. It's really good to be able to talk to you and, of course, all your listeners. By the sound of it, your listeners are not just in South Africa or Johannesburg, but around the world. Is that true? Because, of course, these days, radio, you can pick up radio anywhere in the world from anywhere in the world.
I gather that we have an active listenership that, of course, lots of it is in Johannesburg, Gauteng, South Africa, but it also extends to North America, Europe, parts of the Middle East, maybe even a few people out in the Far East, which is interesting. I guess it's easier now, of course, because every program's podcast as well. So people can listen to them at their leisure at an appropriate time rather than, say, 3 in the morning, which makes it a lot easier for them.
It's incredible how radio has become so literally so universal because with streaming and all of those kinds of things and that wonderful app called Simple Radio where you can literally listen to I think any station anywhere in the world. And my daughter who lives in Brisbane said, "Dad, listen to this quickly." And I switched on my simple radio and hooked up to the Brisbane Classic station, and we were listening to the radio together, although we were about 20,000 miles apart, you know.
Yeah, no, when I'm writing, I often turn on WQXR from New York, and I try to time it so that I'm writing while they're in the all-night mode, so you get to hear longer pieces without commercial interruption, while I'm sitting in the kitchen with a laptop. So it really has become a change in the listening patterns of people pretty much
Entirely.
everywhere.
But I also need to take you to task, Brooks, about how hurt you were by my rejection of your musical choices. Your musical choices are, or tastes, I should perhaps say, and the choices you send me are pretty esoteric. The thing about, I was on the classical music station called Classic FM, which became Classic 1027. I was there for a number of years, and then I was doing a classical program on our local community station called Radio Today. And the general listener is more inclined towards the Mozarts and the Strausses and things like that. And there you were asking me to do Nixon in China and things, which is even for me is pretty kind of heavy going. So I do think that you are perhaps one of the 1% when it comes to particular musical tastes that aren't really, shall I say, in tune with the more general population.
Well, you should have been, you're lucky I didn't ask you to play John Cage or George Crumb music. That would have really fixed your audience.
I did play a couple of John Cage's for you. There was that one with, I think he calls it a treated piano or an altered piano or something, which is also not going to appeal necessarily to your average listener. And back in the days on Classic 1027, which was South Africa's main classical music station, our pieces had to be around 3 to 4 minutes long. Which is understandable, but when I was doing my classical program on Radio Today, where I was compiling the music, I would often play a full symphony because I had the freedom to do that. And honestly, when you can listen to the entire Beethoven Fifth, for example, to use a fairly cliched example, it's so much nicer to listen to the whole thing than it is to listen to just a movement, I think.
Well, I agree. I mean, I dread listening to a movement of a much larger work because I'm anticipating what's coming next, and then
Exactly.
suddenly someone says, "And now you have to go to your grocery store and buy this."
Yes, it's kind of it's banal in a funny way, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I if you'd played my favorite John Cage piece, it would have met your 4 minutes period, and
Yes.
it's
Could have gone and
very
made
tender.
myself a cup of tea. Yeah.
I performed that work in concert once.
Okay. I sense that anybody could perform that work in concert, to be honest.
Oh, you have to act it out. You really have to. There is even, believe it or not, on the internet somewhere, a video of a British symphony orchestra playing the work, specially arranged for all the instruments. And the camera zooms in on one of the clarinet players who cannot restrain herself. She is now in, she's desperately trying not to laugh loudly.
Oh, yes.
We're talking about the work 4 minutes and 33 seconds, which is entirely quiet. There is no sound from the performer, but there is ambient sound from everywhere. People shuffling and coughing and adi-das screeching and everything else. But let me shift to the real topic that I wanted to get to. This film, Let's Not Go to the Dogs Tonight, or now let's not go to the dogs tonight, I think is the full title.
I think it's Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight.
Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight.
Yeah, I think that's.
What was it like to be part of a film that is in some ways very somber and about material that's quite sensitive and is close to the emotional, the nerve endings of people, and yet at the same time is already part of history?
Well, I think that's what's very nice about the film, and perhaps nice isn't the best word, but I think that what is so valuable about the film is that it is tackling an uncomfortable piece of history, and isn't shying away and isn't trying to sugarcoat it, and you know, so it is a very honest piece of filmmaking about a very honest memoir.
We're going to take a very quick ad break. We're talking about Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, a film directed by M. Beth Davidson, which Peter plays an elderly gentleman who remembers things. We'll be right back after these messages. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And this, of course, is on Chai FM.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we're back. And this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And we're delighted to have a chance to talk to Peter Terry. To say actor, I think, is really to minimize his talents. He's written plays. He managed theater administration. He did television. He's done radio, voiceovers, live performance in an orchestra as a narrator of a piece of music, most recently, this film, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. And you were saying that it's uncomfortable but important. How describe for the audience a little bit about what it is about.
All right. Well, you know, when I say uncomfortable, it's a part of history where obviously the old colonial Rhodesia was going with terrible violence and all of the things that one almost wants to forget, and it goes from Rhodesia into Zimbabwe. It's at that time, and you know, it's as I say, it's not something that one really wants to go back to. And having I play a very small role in the film, but having watched the premiere of the movie in Johannesburg, you know, you it's almost as though not that one wants to forget, but that so much of that stuff that was happening then that we all lived through from day to day, you know, in South Africa at something of a distance, obviously, although we were having many similar problems, it's brought back to life in a way that you think, did we really live through that? And it's kind of easy to forget so much of those kinds of things, because one is dealing with the present day problems that are different, but in some ways different but similar. You know, the issues of race and privilege and all of those kinds of things are not going to go away very soon. And the film itself is told, the narrator, if you like, in the film is a little girl of seven, which is what makes it quite a remarkable piece of filmmaking. And M. Beth Davids, the director, found this little girl called Lexi Fenter, who was a seven-year-old kid with missing teeth because she was, you know, the baby teeth were falling out and the new ones were on their way in. And she doesn't act. She just is. And how M. Beth got her to be that child is a I think it's a whole PhD thesis on its own, you know. And so telling the story of Rhodesia turning into Zimbabwe through the innocent eyes, or the naive eyes, if you like, of a seven-year-old is quite an interesting way of dealing with such uncomfortable topics. And of course, the Alexandra Fuller, who wrote the memoir, was herself, excuse me, that little girl at the time. So I think what Emmeth has done has been to, obviously Alexandra Fuller wrote the book when, not when she was seven, but when she was an adult, but using that child to see the world through a child's eyes is a clever and I think sensible way of looking at those times and the difficulties and the racism and the kind of naive racism of the little girl who doesn't know. She, you know, like all of us, grew up in a racist atmosphere, and we didn't know. You know, we picked up on the attitudes of our parents, and we treated black people with disdain, and all of those kinds of things. That's how I grew up, and it's taken me many decades to you know, wade back from all of that and to become much more, I think, of a sensitive person. So that naivety is in itself fascinating in the film.
Did playing your part in the film, did it change you at this point in your life? Do you feel different now having completed that work than when you were going into it? Obviously, I mean, you're an accomplished actor. You've done all kinds of parts, but yes. This one is pretty close to the bone for a lot of people.
Well, yes, but to be honest, my role is literally a tiny, a minute little cameo. The actress Judy Ditchfield and I play this little girl's grandparents, and she and her mother, who's played by Emmeth Davids, go to visit the grandparents one day. And I have I play a character who has suffered a stroke, and is pretty much a vegetable in a wheelchair. So it was not a lot of dialogue for me. I sit there and sort of mutter and murmur and cry. And most of the dialogue representing the grandparents' generation is done by Judy Ditchfield. And she is absolutely superb in this very short little scene. So to, you know, my involvement in the story is very peripheral. And as with all filmmaking, you know, you're often filming in a vacuum. And unlike a play where you develop the play organically over a number of weeks, and you start at the beginning and you finish at the end of the play after 2 hours. And so you have a much stronger sense of where your character fits in and all of those kinds of things. So it was really only when I saw the film that I could place myself in the context of the story and realize just how, I suppose you could say that the grandparents symbolize or represent an attitude that was entirely redundant and finished and you know, almost as though we no longer had any part in the coming Zimbabwe. We were just representing the old, outdated attitudes that the little girl's mother had obviously grown up with, and now the little girl was growing up with. So one sees those people caught up in those attitudes, and you kind of think, like I think often about being a white South African who has lived through apartheid and the change and where we are now, kind of, how did we let this happen? You know, how did we just acquiesce and let it all happen around us without being, I mean, I cannot say that I was in any way an activist against apartheid. I just was busy trying to be an actor and having fun as an actor, and the world went on around us. And yet when you look back, you think, surely we didn't allow things like that to happen. I once asked the question on social media, if we'd had Twitter and Facebook and all those kinds of things during the 70s and 80s, where apartheid was at its height, how long would our government have survived? But I suppose the easy answer to that is that all of those things would have been banned by the jackboot of apartheid. So
Well,
yes,
I know.
it
Yeah, go
did
ahead, Bob.
change me. Watching the movie did change me in the sense that you force yourself, or you are forced by the film, to look back at where you were and examine your journey from there to where we are today. And I like to believe that in the last 30 years, I've grown much closer to my fellow countrymen, if that's not too trite a way of putting it.
Yeah, something you said about the way in which film is put, the movie is made. There have been a couple of films that I watched close up in the act of making them. I remember watching when Serafina was filmed here back in, what was it, 1991 or 92. And I watched several hours worth of young men and girls running back and forth, doing the same running back and forth over and over again, until the director liked what was how it looked. And I took my kids with, and they kept saying, "Is this how it's made? Is this what really happens?"
It's a slow and tedious process. I mean, obviously I've been in a number of films, and this particular one in Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight was one of the smallest and easiest roles that I've had to do. It's a slow and tedious process, and usually they film with only one camera, although these days they tend to film with two or three cameras. But back in the day, when you had one camera, you would have to play the scene to the camera, and then you'd have to play the scene while the camera is then facing the other person, and it takes ages for everything to be moved around and set up and so on. So I'm always in awe of how good actors are at maintaining, sustaining their moment in a particular scene while all of this stuff is going on around them.
We're talking with Peter Terry, one of the stalwarts of South African theater, radio, television, drama, all manner of things, and most recently in a role in Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, a new film that's been re well made last year but released this year in South Africa, directed by M'Beth Davids in her directing debut. This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back, and this is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and our guest today, Peter Terry. Peter Terry, actor, director, theatrical creator, administrator, radio personality, and a man in film over many, many years. And I discover, looking at his bio, we were born in the same year. It's interesting. That must have been a good year for people.
Well, I just look a whole lot younger than you, Brooks.
Oh, we'll get you for that later. Let's talk about the director. Let's talk about M'Beth Davids a bit. I mean, her reputation has always been, obviously, as an actress on screen. As I think I said earlier, her role in Bicentennial Man always absolutely entranced me, even if many critics weren't overly enthusiastic about the film as a whole. But I thought she just glowed in that film. But here she's both acting and directing. How was it like to work with her? What was her, how did she deal with the challenges of doing both roles, dealing with a small child to bring out the narrative flow and dealing with the rest of it? Talk a bit about her for me, please.
Funnily enough, I actually first met M'Beth when she was still a schoolgirl, and she was the girlfriend of a young man that I'm very friendly with, who since became a very famous novelist called Damon Galgut. And I followed her career through her university, and then she came to work for us at the Performing Arts Council for a year or so. So I've followed her Hollywood career with some interest. I mean, I think possibly the one that struck most people the deepest was her incredible role in Schindler's List, where she played that young girl. You know, she's obviously done the Hollywood thing, but I hadn't actually seen her for a couple of decades when I met up with her again on the set of Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. And so I was a little fearful that she would have brought Hollywood with her. But she was exactly the same beautiful, ingenuous, wonderfully humble person that I remembered from decades ago, despite having been such a huge star in Hollywood and having a wonderful career. Knowing that this was her directorial debut, I thought, well, presumably she's going to have brought a lot of what she's learnt in Hollywood with her as to how to make movies. And, you know, for someone making a directing debut, I would imagine you should be very apprehensive of, you know, spending millions of other people's money and all of those kinds of things. She was the, and we shot one of the first days that the film was being made. So it was all still quite fresh. And she was the most wonderful director that I think I've ever worked with, certainly on screen. She was sensitive. She was gentle. She spent as long as you needed talking to you about the tiniest things. And she was also dealing with all of the technicalities of these. We were shooting in a small room. And so your cameras and your sound people and all of those kinds of things are all around you. And she was filming with a couple of cameras at the time. And of course, you know, these days, the cameras that they use to make movies are not those old, you know, big things that one sees in old fashioned films and so on. They're using cameras that look like ordinary, you know, kind of a Leica or a Nikon or something, small little cameras. And with all of this technical advance that one has these days, the cameras are completely unobtrusive. So it really felt like we were just living the scene, which made it so much easier to do and so much, you know, I think I spoke earlier about how intrusive cameras are and how almost inorganic filmmaking is and how tedious it is. This was none of those things. It was just like living through the moments without feeling spied upon. And Embeth was just wonderful, and watching her getting the performance out of that little girl who thankfully doesn't know how to act. She was just being a little girl, and the way Embeth worked with her, and Embeth spoke to me later about how she would play games with this little girl to get her to find the truth of a moment, because they were making very heavy demands on this young child. And mm-hmm. if you haven't seen the film, please try to see it. I think it must be one of the finest performances I've ever seen by a child actor or actress anywhere in the world. But the other point that I want to make is that Embeth plays the mother of this little girl, and she is a very unsympathetic character whose character journey in the film is really quite distressing to watch, as the, you know, everything is kind of crushing her, and Embeth plays this role brilliantly. I mean, Embeth is, well, she's a very, very good actress, but to do that and direct at the same time. And I said to her, how did you do that? You know, how could you have split your focus to the point where you're directing a very difficult film and playing a very difficult character? And she said, well, you know, I've lived with this book and I've been working on this film for about 8 years. And so I knew exactly who that character was. And so I was able to slip into that character perhaps more easily than anybody else would, who's coming kind of fresh and raw to the film. She already knew that character so intimately that she was able to do this kind of slightly schizophrenic thing of directing and then playing a very difficult character, directing, playing. And so I mean, watching Embeth at work, it was an absolute joy to me. And, you know, talking to a fellow that you might know and your listeners might know, a man called Alan Swerdlow, who's a theatre director. And he was talking to me last night. He said, you know, I finally saw Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. He said, it's absolutely superb. And the friend that he was with said, this is, at last, this is the great South African movie. And I think if it's not the great South African movie, it's certainly one of the great South African movies. And if one has it, I think it's already come off circuit, you know, which is a terrible indictment on audiences if it's already had to be taken off because of lack of ticket buyers. And with any luck, it'll get onto something like a Netflix in time to come. I think it's British. Premiere is only in October, so I mean, I think it's not dead in the water yet. But as a fine movie, if you can get to see it, please go and see it. I mean, as I say, if you blink, you miss me. But I can therefore say that I think it is an astonishingly good movie because my contribution to it is so small. But boy, I am proud of it.
I missed it. We were traveling when it was coming, and then by the time I got back, it was off circuit, which depressed me a great deal. I remember the book. Obviously, it's a different type of medium than the film, and I will watch for it carefully, whether it shows up on one of the streaming services or if some enterprising cinema organization decides to bring it back by popular demand, or if it starts to get an award somewhere.
It's released by Sony Pictures Classic, which I would think is a, you know, an iconic brand.
Yeah.
That they're not going to kind of let it die. And hopefully, you know, I mean, my daughter in Australia is desperate to see it. My friends in America and Britain all want to see it, particularly all the South African expats. And Zimbabwe, Rhodesian expats, and so on. And so I'm sure it's got a life ahead of it. I did see one criticism on social media. Oh, you know, this is not the book. And oh, this is inaccurate and that's inaccurate. And I think, do you want to see a history lesson, or do you want to see someone's vision of a very, very interesting book? Because movies are not books, you know. So Embeth, I think, took as little poetic or dramatic license as possible, but I mean, obviously, a film is going to be different from the book, and it's That's the age of people saying, "Oh, you know, it's not the book." No, of course, it's not the book.
That's a little bit like criticizing the book Moby Dick by saying it's about a really big angry fish.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And, you know, there's I've written one or two screenplays in my time that have never seen the light of day. But I learned how to write screenplays from a man called Sid Field, who is one of the screenplay gurus of American cinema. And using his techniques and formulas and so on, it works. And he says, when you're adapting a book or a novel, respect the book and then throw it away almost, you know, and then make your own movie. And I think Embeth has done that with huge respect to the book and to the writer, but has made a truly unique film, which is, you know, Embeth Davids as auteur creating something unique.
We're going to take another quick ad break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and I'm delighted to have as my guest, Peter Terry, broadcaster, director, screenplay writer, actor, administrator, on and on and on, and most recently in what he describes as a very small part in the new film, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. We'll be back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual. And my guest today, I'm very pleased to have Peter Terry. Peter, of course, no surprises, familiar to many, many members of the audience, radio host, actors in live stage, film, television, administrator at Performing Arts Council of the Transvaal for years, on and on. And we're talking to him today because he's in the new film, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, based on Alexander Fuller's novelization or memoir, really, directed by M. Beth Davids in her directorial debut. And Peter was explaining just how good and empathetic she had been with the young girl, seven-year-old, eight-year-old girl, who is the focal point of the film, is the lens through which the action is seen and understood. But M. Beth is also acting in it. Now, the question that occurred to me when she was guiding the production, the actors and the technical people, she's one person. When she's acting in her role, she's different. Did she have a different style or different voice? Were her accents different? Did she manage to switch back and forth with ease?
I think that she's obviously recognizably M. Beth, and she speaks with M. Beth's voice, as it were. She's not putting on a regional accent or anything like that, but the persona is not M. Beth. I mean, what you are seeing is a completely different character from the real M. Beth, and in that way, what she does is all the more remarkable, because it's almost as if you say, but hang on, that person looks like M. Beth, but it's not M. Beth at all. What is also, I think, unusual in a way is that, you know, the star of a movie, which in a way she was the big name in the film, usually would like to be playing the good guy or the, you know, the sort of the sympathetic character or the hero or heroine. M. Beth is none of those things in this. She is a very unpleasant person. I mean, not without any possibility of redemption. You know, I mean, she's just one of those people who has been worn down by life and is struggling with alcohol and you know, a husband who's never there because he's out in the bush shooting terrorists and all of those kinds of things. So, I mean, she's a very sad character, and certainly the kind of person that one saw often in those times. Funnily enough, I'm busy reading another memoir set in Zimbabwe called The Last Resort by a man called somebody Douglas. Can't think of his name right now. Which is set in about 2005. So it's a good quarter of a century later than Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. But you see those same people, you know, those kind of colonial white Zimbabweans who lived hard and didn't want to give up what they had created, perhaps on the backs of others. You know, the Rhodesian colonial or the Zimbabwean colonial mentality, psyche, is quite unique, I think, different from what we went through in South Africa. I think as white people in South Africa during the struggle and so on, I think we had many, many differences from those Rhodesians who would sort of drop everything at the kind of call of a telephone and go off to fight, and the women would be left alone on the farm. And, you know, it was tough. Tough times. And yes, I'm looking at it through a white perspective. I'm sure from a black Zimbabwean perspective, it was all very different. But this film is about white people in Rhodesia going into Zimbabwe. And, you know, as I said earlier in our chat, this film doesn't shy away from what it is. It's not making black man good, white man bad. You know, it's not as, if you pardon the expression, it's not as black and white as that. It's you have sympathy for everybody. In fact, she deals with the black point of view very sensitively and very truthfully, and one feels for them, but one also feels for the white people who are, through perhaps no fault of their own, caught up in something far bigger than themselves that has perhaps been coming since you know, the first white Rhodesian columns went into that part of Africa in back in what, 1897. So it's, you know, it's I think ultimately what I'd like to say about the film is that it is very, very truthful and very honest, and very unsettling. A good
It's
word, I
not
think, to describe it. Yeah.
quite the same texture then as that famous film about Kenya. Well, there are two.
Is White Mischief, that one, wasn't it?
Well, that's one of the two I was thinking of,
Yeah.
and the other one, of course, is oh goodness, my memory has just gone blank. Heavens, Isaac Dennison's novel turned
Isaac.
into.
I Had a Farm in Africa, yes.
Whatever that book is called, and that film is
Yes.
Robert Redford. Please help.
Out of
Thank
Africa, that's what it's called. Yeah.
you. Your memory's
Yeah.
better than mine, Peter. Really, it is. You've got this.
I told you I looked younger than you.
Obviously, you're more adroit mentally too.
Not really. I keep discovering that I've forgotten all sorts of things.
I
One
didn't
thing,
write
you
that
know,
down.
you've very kindly mentioned in your sort of introduction to me that I've got a lot of str have had a lot of strings to my bow in the theatre, actor, playwright, director, administrator, etc., etc. But I'm now going into a very new area for me, and that is I'm publishing my debut novel. It's at the printers as we speak,
Very
so.
good.
And it's a whole new adventure for me. And you know, one laughs at each other about not forgetting and who looks older and who looks younger and so on. But I'm quite proud of the fact that I'm publishing a novel at nearly 75, a debut novel, and hopefully going to go into publishing, not just publish my own book, but perhaps publish other people's books as well. I like learning new things, you know, and I'm not dead yet.
Tell me how, what's it called? This is your moment to go ahead and pump the book.
All right. Well, yeah, it's called Being Bill, and in essence, it's about it's a kind of a I describe it as a semi-fictional biography because it's about a man who meets somebody at a literary festival, and this man gets a bit drunk and tells him his life story. He decides that he'd actually like to try to write this biography of this man who he only met once, as himself. So it's been described to me as quite a postmodern novel, but I still don't really know what postmodern means. But it's a bit like The French Lieutenant's Woman. It's a book about writing a book, in a way. And there's a certain amount of Lolita in it too, because the main character in the book becomes completely obsessed. He's a middle-aged man, and he becomes completely obsessed with a very young woman. So, and to be honest, I think I must have read Lolita about 50 years ago, so I don't remember much about it except that it's about a man who is obsessed with a young girl. But I think that's where the two part ways, and so on. So, I've had obviously had a couple of people read it and give me feedback and so on, the responses that I've had from the few friendly readers has been very positive. So I'm hoping that it's going to be an unusual book, and you know, we're printing the first 100 copies, as I say, right now. And I've already had a lot of interest in the book from friends and from people who know me, or who like you kind of know me from a distance, who are intrigued to see what I come up with next. So I'm hoping that it might just take off. And we might have to print another couple of hundred copies and do all the literary festivals and the book launch circuit and all of that kind of thing. But I'm just very proud of the fact that I've finally done what I've always wanted to do, and that's publish a novel. And yeah, okay, it's self-publishing. We've started a partner and I have started a little imprint, which and we'll be, as you know, hoping that people will send manuscripts to us, and we can take it from there and maybe grow from there. So you know, One of the things, of course, about being an actor and in the arts, and now that the performing arts councils don't really exist anymore, is that you have to have as many strings to your bow as possible. So I've been able in the last 25 years since I started freelancing, I've been able to learn to do all sorts of things and reinvent myself over and over.
Well, that's the curse or the joy of reaching our age. I'm on my third or fourth version of myself, and I mean, you know, you just have to do it. We are talking with Peter Terry, who, as he says, he's got many strings to his bow or many arrows in the quiver, and most recently was in the new film "Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight." This is Brooke Spector, your host of The Deep Dive, and we'll be back after these messages, and then we'll have a final word from our guest.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest today, Peter Terry, man of, we sort of like the Swiss Army knife of the arts, shall we say. You got all kinds of tools there. All kinds of roles and all kinds of actions. And now I learned he's becoming a self-published novelist as well. That wasn't in the bio that I read, but we move on. Peter, let me, one broad question. You could talk on it for hours, but you got like 2 or 3 minutes. The future of live theater and filmmaking in South Africa. Live theaters had some hard years in many ways. Is there hope for it? Is there a chance? Will the flowers bloom?
I do believe so. There's a lot going on in the theater. My own sadness in a way is that, you know, with the performing arts councils, which were in every province, Cape, Transvaal, as it used to be, Free State, Natal, and so on. There was a whole ecosystem there that there was a lot of strength in the fact that we were all pooling resources in terms of decor and wardrobes and those kinds of things, and we were well subsidized, and the amount of work that we were producing and the quality of work that we were producing was high, and yes, it was an apartheid structure in a certain sense. But I do believe that they could, instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, they could have kept the system and made it far more democratic and transformational. So for me, the theater is somewhat fragmented in this country at the moment. But you go to a place like Cape Town, where there is all sorts of stuff going on. Small stuff, biggish stuff, some big musicals, some very profitable musicals, and lots of new work, lots of South African work, and it's the same in Johannesburg too. Of course, that there are lots of little things happening, but because no one has really got very much money, it tends to be on a much smaller scale until you get somebody like Peter Turin and so on, who can put money into what was the one we did last year, My Fair Lady, that was at the beginning of this year, which was a lavish production and made a massive amount of money at the box office. But those kinds of things used to be done by the performing arts councils, and now, you know, it's just fragmented for me. But I think there is definitely hope. There are lots of festivals. People are taking their work around to festivals, living the gypsy life, you know, going from festival to festival. But in terms of commercial theatre, you know, I was last year and this year I've been able to have been in Peter Turin's Agatha Christie productions. And there's a definite market for that. So there is still a market for commercial theatre. But who knows? You know, theatre has been dying for thousands of years. I think that's the truth of it, is that there'll always be people having to make theatre, having to perform, and people who want to see it. So, yeah, there's hope, definitely.
Someday somebody's going to discover a letter by Aristophanes to his mother-in-law, saying, yes, the theater is dying. What are we going to do?
Exactly. I'm quite sure there is such a letter somewhere.
Peter, it's been a delight to chat with you. I do appreciate your taking time to join us. We've been
Well, thank
speaking
you.
with Peter Turi. I almost said Peter Turin. Did you see that? What happens when
People
you
do make
mix?
that mistake from time to time. I had somebody coming up to me in the foyer of the theater while I was doing one of the Agatha Christies. She said to me, "I didn't know you could act." I said, "Well, I've been acting for 50 odd years." She said, "But you're Peter Turin, aren't you?" I said, "No."
Well, the non-Peter Turin, but the Peter Turi has been with us this morning. As I say, the Swiss Army knife of the arts. You can use that if you like.
I like it. I think I will.
In film and radio, television, on live stage, behind the desk, organizing and managing, and most recently in the new film, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, based on Alexandra Fuller's book. And directed by M. Beth Davids, and starring M. Beth Davids as well. And Peter plays a man who has very few lines, but lots of grimaces and, how shall we say, facial expressions that are dialogue.
Exactly. Thank
It's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks very much for joining us.
you very
This
much,
is
Brooke.
the Deep Dive, and we'll be back again next week. Remember, if you want to hear this conversation a second time, Sunday morning at 10, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell people who like theater to listen in to our rebroadcast. And if you can't make either of those, podcast, it's always available on a podcast. This is the Deep Dive, and we'll be again next week.